You're listening to TV Madness with your host, Makisha Madden-Toby. Today's show is very special in that we're sort of winging it. And instead of doing a very classy, very polished NPR West podcast like I typically do, I decided to go ahead and forego all of my reservations and do a teleconference with Jared Harris, who plays Lane Price on Mad Men. As you probably know if you're a fan, his character committed suicide, and as a result, I was heartbroken, and a lot of fans were heartbroken, and as it turns out, a lot of TV critics like me are and were heartbroken, and so we participated on this teleconference with AMC to sort of get some answers from Jared and find out the thoughts behind his suicide, what it's going to mean for the show, and all that good stuff. So check out the interview. It's full of some hijinks. My favorite scene is when, or favorite part of the podcast is when Jared makes fun of a reporter whose name happens to have Lane in it, and that makes him very excited. And of course, unfortunately, the reporter had no idea what was even happening and continued to ask the question in spite of this pretty awesome, funny moment. But overall, the interview turned out well. I think Jared answered a lot of questions for people who were looking for answers, and I have to thank him in advance for that, as well as I'm sure a lot of critics want to. So check it out and enjoy the show.
I mean, I think that probably just because Matt, his way of writing is that it's always an accumulative effect. You can see him laying things down that, you know, he's paying off things in this season that he's laid off and he laid down in season two, you know what I mean? I think in sort of maintaining story threads and something like that, that possibility is probably more present with him and his style of writing, you know? But I don't know. Right. I mean, they haven't spoken to me. Neither of them have spoken to me about what they're thinking of for the next seasons of their shows.
And last night with Jaguar not starring during the first suicide was sheer brilliance. I thought that was fantastic. And, you know, Lane could have pretty much hung himself anywhere, but did he choose to hang himself?
It was vindictive. Nope. He was angry, and it was the expression of his anger. It was a passive-aggressive act. And
you answered my...
His choice of doing it there was a fuck you to the office, to the people who work there, particularly to Don. And then the passive side of that was in the letter, which the boilerplate suicide note, which explains nothing. So, you know, he's trying to dig a hole for the people, you know, there, particularly Don, and make them feel bad about what he's done. I mean, it was a cowardly thing to do. He did it to try and hurt them the way that he feels that they've hurt him.
Great. Well, I really appreciate your time today, Jared, and good luck.
You're welcome.
Well, my question about the seriousness of filming, that hanging scene, for someone like me, I probably would have tried to, you know, if everyone was being all quiet, try and jump up and scare people or something. Was it very serious when you were filming that, or did you?
It was serious. I mean, the trouble is that you have so little time to shoot on the schedule. They have 8 days to shoot all that stuff. So, I mean, the whole episode. So, it's similar to what you're saying. I felt like breaking into song when I was hanging there from the door every time they called cut. But, you know, the actors were trying to maintain a mood and a feeling, and I didn't want to be disrespectful to how they felt. My job was a lot easier than their job. I just had to hang limply from the door and stick my tongue out. You know, they still had to deliver a performance and a reaction. So, but yes, I know what you mean. I felt like taking the piss out of it, yeah.
Earlier in the season, we got to see Lane kind of stand up for himself at the fight when he was fighting Pete Campbell.
Yes.
Was that pretty choreographed? Did you guys actually, you know, like, accidentally hit each other or anything like that? Or
No, no, it was choreographed. Those things are all incredibly safe. You know, there was no, there were no wayward punches or anything like that. I mean, he got more damage from the hitting the side of that table and bouncing off of it. Then, you know, that's something that you get used to when you're learning stage combat, is how to either fake punches or pull punches. So we were all pretty good from that. The interesting thing about that particular scene was the two different styles of fighting, you know, whereas Pete had that kind of more recognizable American bob and weave style of fighting, and that Lane had that sort of old-fashioned upright pick a stance and, you know, have a jab like a piston type fight.
Well, very cool. Thank you very much for talking with us, and maybe I'll hope we can see you on Downton Abbey or something.
I'm wondering what conversations the writing staff or Matt Weiner had with you prior to this episode, and when you found out, you know, were you on board with this ending, or were you surprised?
Well, you know, you're not given a choice about whether you're on board or not. I mean, it's Matt's show, it's his vision. That's something that has worked incredibly well, so why question it now that suddenly it may be inconvenient? But you have to, the man's dramatic storytelling abilities are, you know, unquestionable, so you wouldn't start doing it now. He told me after the read through for episode 10. And he basically, after the read-throughs, every episode, he asks everyone to hang around so that he can speak to you and give you notes, because he's going to be working whilst you're shooting. He doesn't always get down to the set. I could see he was leaving me for the last person. And then he said, let's go up to my office, which I knew wasn't a good sign. Then he offered me incredibly expensive brandy, and that just, you know, I was like, I knew this wasn't going to go well. And then he said, so I have something I want to talk to you about. And, you know, I knew at that point, I went, this doesn't sound good. And he went, no, it's not. I'm really sorry. So, but, he explained why he wanted to do it. And he'd really been building up to it for the season. And I could see from an acting point of view, it was to my benefit to go out with a bang rather than a whimper, you know. At the same time, I know that Mad Men is just going to get bigger and bigger as it builds towards season 7. There's already an obsession with, you know, the last episode of season 7. And I'm sad that I won't be a part of that, you know, of that build of the show. But then again, I joined late, so there's no reason why I should be. I'm very, very lucky to have been a part of it.
Well, we've been lucky to watch you. Over your time on the show, what was your favorite Lane Price moment?
My favorite Lane Price moment, I would have to be the fight. I really enjoyed that. That was such a good scene. That would probably be that one. And the Jaguar not starting. I laughed my ass off when he told me the Jaguar wasn't going to start. I just fell off the chair laughing.
About, Lane's choice of committing suicide, and the Jaguar was a fuck you to Sterling Cooper Draper Price. And it didn't work out, but, kind of bigger picture,
you know,
how would you care?
The Jaguar wasn't saying fuck you to them. The Jaguar was, I mean, doing it in the office was saying fuck you to them.
Okay.
I think the Jaguar was, once he sees the Jaguar, I think he gets the idea at that point. There's a certain sort of irony of it that he decides
right.
to do it in there.
Okay.
But once he does it, and when he decides to go then and do it, try again and do it in the office, I think that's a vindictive act. He's trying to make them feel as bad as they have made him feel. And discovering him in the office, I mean, they have to handle all the messy paperwork. If he'd done it in the garage, none of them would have seen, you know. They,
mm-hmm. Right. Well, so my question... was kind of broader about Lane Price as an overall character. How would you describe him? I mean, he kind of was a fan favorite, but, you know, we saw these little glimpses into his private life, you know, his father calling him weak and with him yelling at his wife and making the lewd comment to Joan. So, like, where do you, I mean, is he a good guy, a bad guy, just a guy?
I just don't think there's such a thing on this show as a good guy and a bad guy. That's why I think people are alike. I don't think that, you know, Matt's writing doesn't talk down to an audience in that sense. That people are human beings, and people have good moments and they have bad moments. And there's things that if there was a camera following you around every day of every moment of your life, there's things you'd like to edit out of it, and other parts you'd be proud of showing people, you know? And that's what he's doing. I think that probably the most surprising thing is this season is that you've had a pretty strong sense of a moral code about Lane, and he seems to have broken it. But that goes back to last season and the night on the town with Don, and the way that Matt talked to me about that was that he was being corrupted by Don. Mm-hmm. And once you've been corrupted, there's no way of going back, if you like. But that's assuming that there was something, I suppose, from a moralistic point of view. But
I had two questions. The first is, did you feel that his death came a little bit suddenly? Because, you know, there's the foreshadowing of the check, and then just a few episodes later, he's gone. And also, he seemed really capable with that Jaguar, knowing how to kill himself. Has he thought about it before?
Yeah, I mean, the preparation, you mean, yeah. I mean, actually, if you go back, there's a line in the second hour of the first episode of season 5 where he's on the phone with Dolores trying to persuade her to come over to the office to pick up the wallet. And he says, when she says she might drop by, he says, well, I'll be here the rest of my life. So, yeah, it was sort of laid in there early. So I think that it happened too quick. No, I mean, from would I like to still be working on the show? Of course. I love being there. What a great place to work and fantastic people to work with. So, I appreciate that they used it as part of the momentum to build towards the end of the season. So, I don't feel like it happened too quick from a dramatic point of view. Also, you know, those sorts of things you've got to sit on and figure out, well, how long can you string that out? And then before people get wind of what it is, it still ended up being a surprise. People were caught by surprise. So that means it was a success. George Lane.
Yes, thank you for taking some time out for this.
How are you, Lane?
Can we talk a little bit about the emotional preparation for the scene with Don and Lane? Because Lane goes through a range of, you know, of justifications and rationalizations and mea culpas during this scene, and so you had to play a fairly wide range of reactions to what Don was laying down for you. Can you talk about that preparation for that scene?
Well, first of all, those are the sorts of scenes that you want to be given as actors, as an actor. You know, I mean, what a great, juicy scene. And they're much more fun to do than the scenes where you sort of have to go, who wants to go and get French fries? they're much more fun, and you enjoy the challenge in terms of how you're going to do it. The preparation is you just read it many 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 times and try and figure out what your instincts are, what your reaction would be. That was interesting for me because when I read what my reaction would be, I saw that Lane wasn't taking advantage of certain opportunities in that scene. That seemed to me to be those opening doors there. And that, of course, was part of Matt's strategy in terms of how he writes the scene, is as an audience member, you can see there's better answers that he could give and there's better opportunities. There's ways that maybe he could talk his way around this. And he doesn't do it, and you start to wonder why doesn't he, and then the answer comes, is that the man's pride prevented him from it, from doing it. And even in that situation, it prevents him from doing it. And, you know, that the tactics and the change of emotions and everything, I think that it's interesting when you're constructing a scene like that from a performer's point of view, is you want to try and arrive in as different a state as possible, you know. So that was the idea behind the 4A's thing, and he was slightly, he had some false modesty about, you know, I hope that's not a problem. And then, of course, it turns into a completely different situation, and that the fact that he's going to try and bluff his way out of it and lie about it. And then eventually when he realized, I don't think he thought that he would get fired over it. Mm-hmm. I think that he thought that if he'd been called into Bert's office, it would have been different. But the fact that it was Don, he thought maybe he could get away with it if it was... And ultimately, of course, he just... he didn't intercept the mail, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately his plan had been that he was just going to get hold of that check and then just, you know, rip it up, you know, and make it disappear when it came back from the bank. So, again, you know, those are the sort of opportunities that you look forward to. So you want to try and do justice to them.
Well, just as a quick follow-up, were you given a great deal of latitude in how you took on that particular scene, and did you take several runs at it, playing it different ways?
Yeah, we did. I mean, what happens when you normally do those things is that you never get all of it, or hardly ever you get all of it in one take, in terms of feel like you got it all right. Mm-hmm. But some parts you feel work, and other parts when you do the next take, you focus on getting that bit right, you know. And then sometimes it's a strange thing, you know. Sometimes it can be just that the way your body is angled might be wrong, and you know, or the way sometimes that you need to be touching something, you know what I mean? It's a tactile thing, and you have to respond to whatever you're feeling at that time. You get instincts, so like you sort of pick a current up from somewhere, and if you suddenly find that you're, for some reason, that holding a pen is giving you access to something, well then, you know, pick the pen up at the right moment, even though that might not have been there. So that, for whatever reason, that your mind is connected to that thing, that's what's gonna give it to you, you know. So, and then I know there's one specific take that we did where I felt like I didn't know what point it would be useful in the edit, but there should be just one take that we did where he was very still, and he, you know, all of the hiding his head away and burying in his hands and everything, so Don couldn't see him, which felt right, but there needs to be one take that we did where he didn't move at all.
Okay, so many people asked my questions, but I got one more. I guess my big question is, you came in after the show had already established itself after two seasons.
Yes.
Did that influence how you played Lane and how you interacted with the rest of the cast at all?
Well, you need to fit into the world that they've established. And, yeah, I mean, actually, yes, the answer to your question specifically is when I watched the end of season two and I saw that Duck Phillips went head to head with Don Draper in front of, the English guys from PPL, that when it came down to it, they chopped off Duck's head and kept Don. And so therefore, Lane was aware of that having happened, and he knew that if he forced an issue, they would choose Don over him always, and that he was therefore expendable. So he had to be careful about how he dealt with Don, because Don's the golden goose, you know, the goose laying the golden eggs type thing, and that. So that it changed my attitude towards if I had confrontation scenes with Don about how I dealt with him, because I knew that if I pushed the situation towards it to an ultimatum, I would lose, that my bosses in England would go, well, it's time for you to leave. You obviously can't hack it.
Awesome, thanks.
Have you heard any reactions from fans online about their being upset, being in shock? How in general have you...
I haven't at all. I mean, I've been on the phone doing these interviews for the last couple of hours, but I haven't, I haven't looked, because I'm working on a movie here, so... I haven't had a chance to look at all that stuff yet. Why? What's going on?
I was just curious your thoughts. Lots of upset people. But I guess in general, then,
good.
If not last night's episode, over your course on the show, how have you kind of reacted or noticed how powerful the fans are? Where have you, have you seen a huge fan base grow around your character?
Have I seen the what?
Have you seen fans get excited about your character? Whether
I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, from a sort of a dramaturgical point of view, why it made sense to Matt to do this, because he was a character that the fans had gotten very affectionate over, and it was, so in that sense it would be a really juicy, powerful way of surprising the fans and doing it. So I think that, yeah, from that point of view, it's a way of getting something very powerful out of the end of the season, you know?
You've played a lot of roles in your career, a lot of different types of characters. Do you think Lane will be kind of a defining role for you as you go forward? How does it fit in with the rest of
the character? I have played so many different types of characters. You know, I really have. So I don't think, I mean, in terms of, I mean, being on a show like Mad Men will define your career in a very, very positive and beneficial way. And these types of experiences really only come once in an actor's life, unless you're Elizabeth Moss, because she was on The West Wing as well, wasn't she? So, I mean, it's very, very rare. So in that sense, yes, in terms of but that's for you as an actor. But I think in terms of the character, I've really made a deliberate attempt to be as different as I can be from role to role. So, I mean, for me personally, I feel like this has been from a performance point of view, this has been another in a long line of really of great characters that I've been able to play. It's obviously a famous one because of Mad Men, you know, and the effect of that show has had. But, you know, I mean, if you stack Lane Price next to Captain Mike from Benjamin Button, and alongside, John Lennon, or along playing Ulysses S. Grant, you know, for me, that's what gives me pleasure, is like you look from one to the other, and it's just the difference between the characters is what I enjoy.
And that was our podcast for the day. Thank you so much for checking it out, for listening. It's never easy to sort of try something different, and I'm trying, and that was a lot of fun for me. I also edited out a lot of the parts where people the reporters, I guess, were tired. It's Monday. It was a Monday. And they were calling him Lane. So just for their own state of peace of mind and mine, I took out all of the references where people accidentally called him Lane. But overall, it was a fantastic teleconference, and I think Jared Harris is awesome for doing it. As he said, he's on location. And I will miss him playing Lane Price on Mad Men, as I'm sure you will too. Again, thanks for listening, and take care.